Where you find every day Black history is made.
Unruffled beat. So, my friends, you hear the unruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch, and that signals it's Wednesday, 8 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story?, the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.9 in Huntsville. And let's not forget live streaming at kpft.org from anywhere in the ether. Okay, I am Mary Edgerton, one of the co-hosts of this unique program, and I welcome you to our Storytelling Hour. Along with the rest of our team, our show creator and co-host, Hank Rubicek, my other co-hosts, Warren Holloman and Greg Audell, and engineer Nicole Rocherlin. We celebrate the power of story by bringing you storytellers who will take us on journeys through their worlds and through windows of their souls with personal stories that bring us together as humans. I can't say how much that statement applies to tonight, and you all will find that out. But before I introduce tonight's guest teller, I need to tell you that tonight kicks off our fun drive at KPFT. And I also want to remind you that we can't do any of this without you. So why not give us a call? 713-526-5738. And let one of our steadfast volunteers take your pledge, because you don't want to be without the eclectic mix of programs here at 90.1. I'll thank you on the air, unless you say otherwise. If you'd rather give your pledge online, go to kpft.org, then select donations, tell us how you'll pay, and then, if you would please, scroll down to So What's Your Story as the program you designate to get your pledge. A generous donation of $200 will get you some very cool thank you gifts. You can choose a 1 year's membership to the Houston Storytellers Guild or a guest co-host spot on this program. I think that is way cool. So, yes, you too can be a star, all for $200. And during the show, Hank is going to be reporting from Pledge Central to tell us how we're doing. Okay, speaking of stars, and I know some of you are would-be stars out there that are ready to pledge, my regularly scheduled guest was not able to make it, so my co-host, Warren Holloman, has generally agreed to step in and be my guest. This is really exciting for me. I've been Warren's guest twice, and I have really wanted him to be on as my guest, in particular to tell us the story he's going to tell us. This story is the one that led to my first contacting Warren and our subsequent friendship, and now my gig as co-host. As you all know, I'm a physician here in Houston. And so one night, I was searching on the internet, trying to come up with the name of a book about learning how to practice medicine. And this book is actually The House of God. But as I was searching with those various things, hospital, emergency rooms, difficult medical care, one came up called The Hospital. And I looked at the little description of it. I'd never heard of that. And a little more research, I found out that this book was about Houston. It was about the charity hospitals in Houston. It was written by Jan de Hartog, a playwright originally from Holland, who had come to Houston to join the creative writing faculty at the University of Houston. The book was described as an exposé of the hospital system here in Houston that was designed to care for the uninsured, and publication of it motivated the city and the county to create the Harris County Hospital District providing public hospital and community health centers with adequate funding. And this was a huge change. I'm going to stop using that word huge, but I didn't say huge, I said huge. I paid $60 for a copy of it from Amazon as it was out of print, and it was worth it. I don't lend that book out. What an amazing book. I could not put it down. I went online searching again about this fabulous person, Yonda Hartog. And one of the things I found in the news was that his friend, Warren Holloman, had announced his passing in 2002. And I said, well, I know that name. Warren Holloman runs the wellness program for physicians at MD Anderson. And I get email from him all the time. I mean, not personally, but because I'm a member of the faculty. But I reached out to him personally. I sent him an email, and I said, I've just read this book called The Hospital by Yonda Hartog, and I understand you know him. Well, we met. And what has resulted has been a great friendship with Warren and his wife, not to mention our realization of our common interest in storytelling. So I have asked Warren to come here and tell us how he met Yonda Hartog and the stories behind the hospital. So just to remind everybody, I know you hear Warren every month. He's a family therapist here in Houston. He and his wife, Marsha Holloman, a family practitioner, both became very involved in community-based medicine here. And then before coming to work for MD Anderson, he was the director of programs for community health and the art of medicine at Baylor College of Medicine. And that's where our story begins. So I'm going to let you take it over from here, Warren.
Well, thank you, Mary. How long ago was that you came over to our house and we watched some old videotapes of Yonda Hartog telling his favorite stories?
So I know, I hate to say it, but I think about 2 or 3 weeks after I met you was when I separated from my husband. So it's marked into everything in that era is marked in time. So that was 2013.
Yeah.
And so that was 4 years ago.
Yeah, well, Jan was, I was just saying before the show that I think in my life I've been privileged to know a lot of really good people, but he may be the one person that I've been fortunate to know who was just truly great by any measure. He was a hero in many ways, and he was certainly my personal hero, and I was really privileged to get to know him. I got to know him through his work with the public hospital system here in Houston, but it turned out he had done bigger things in his life that I later learned about.
I can't wait to hear
about
it.
And I'll talk about that tonight, too. The book, before I tell about how I came to know him, maybe we should tell the listeners a little bit about what's in this book. A group of volunteers make their way into the public hospital, kind of like soldiers in a Trojan horse. And there they witnessed things that just appalled them. They found lots of roaches, lots of flies, lots of blood and vomit and urine and feces. They talked about the stench all the time. Overcrowded conditions. No private rooms. Everything was open wards. People would wait for hours for a nurse to come assist them with something. Overcrowded, understaffed. And on top of all that, there are some choice complaints, I have to say, that will bear into my story later about the Baylor Surgery Department. Sometimes, believe it or not, some of the surgeons or the trainees would be rude to the patients in the public hospital.
Believe it or not.
And believe it or not, sometimes they would view these uninsured patients more as practice dummies for their training and their surgery training than as human beings with rights and dignity all their own. So Jan was a writer and a volunteer. And the nurses said, finally, somebody sees what goes on here. You're a writer. Tell the world about this so we can fix it. So he did. He started writing letters to the editors of the Houston Post and Houston Chronicle, and then he wrote a book. And his basic line was this: Houston, you claim to be a world-class city because you just built an air-conditioned baseball stadium, the Astrodome. But your public hospital is not air-conditioned, and the conditions are downright medieval. You should be ashamed, and you know you can do better.
That's amazing. You know, I was looking back over through some notes. They had to open windows to the operating rooms. Mm-hmm. So they had a sterile fly swatter in the operating rooms. Yeah. It was somebody to try to catch the bugs, if you can imagine that. And
that was in the old Jefferson Davis Hospital, which was on Allen Parkway. And then in the middle of this period covered by the book, 1962 to 1963, they opened Ben Taub Hospital, which is now the neuropsychiatry building.
Building, right.
Yeah.
Which I didn't realize, but you pointed out to me, yeah, this other building was the Ben Taub that they were talking about in the book, and then the new Ben Taub.
Yeah.
The new Ben Taub is the new Ben Taub. I think also there is this constant thought that you can use patience to work on and to learn from. And I think that's something that we need to fight against. Every patient deserves dignity and care. And that was something that Jan de Hartog brought to the whole picture, which I think is also going to figure into some more of your stories.
And that's a really dicey thing. That's sort of why he got thrown out of Houston for saying that. But he was courageous to do it. And as I tell my story, you'll realize why the surgery department of Baylor and the icons there, like Dr. DeBakey, really didn't scare him, because he had faced down bigger foes in his life.
So we will get to a little bit more of that. And Warren, I think you ran into some problems bringing him there, so you were brave to stand up to the administration also. I have to say, I really wished I'd met him. It was so exciting reading the book, and then going online and reading about him, and then looking and trying to see if he was still in Houston, and that's when I found your note that he had passed on. But at least having you has given me a little insight into meeting him. I think there's a little bit of all of us that wants to leave our mark on the world, just as Jan de Hartog did. And you've only heard us scratch the surface of what he did. You'll hear some more. But I can tell you how you can leave your mark right now. Please give us a call. Get your pencil out. 713-526-5738. And take the plunge. Make your pledge to KPFT FM 90.1 on your dial, designating So What's Your Story as the radio program you love best. Donate $200 and come on and be a co-host. Hey, Hank. How things going out there in Pledge Central?
Mary, a little slow so far, but I'm really optimistic. But I have to tell you something. I love and respect the two of you a lot, as you know. And you two are really the antithesis of the kind of doctors that we sometimes make reference to, the sort of people who feel empowered to alienate themselves and be insensitive. And, you know, we had Barry Rose on, and we had Michael Schaefer and other physicians like the two of you in the health industry, who are so wonderful to patients. And I just hope people are listening to these great stories, because it's a lesson to be learned. And, you know, that's what this show's all about. You knew where I was headed there. It's all about Pacifica, freedom of expression, that came out during the peace movement when people doubted that radio could work without corporate sponsorship. And our station is a very unique one. We have a program inventory like no other on the dial. And frankly, our show is, So What's Your Story, is probably the best example of that. Because, as you said a little bit earlier, Mary, we do something that no one else does. This is a real, real original. And 713-526-5738, Jam KPFT will allow us to know that you folks feel exactly the same way.
So, listeners out there, if you have a chance, help us stay on the air. Help keep these stories going. Before we continue, let me remind you, you're listening to my guest storyteller, Warren Holloman, on our Wednesday show of So What's Your Story? Only on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.9 in Huntsville. And I always like to make sure everyone knows that you can catch the show from anywhere using live streaming on kpft.org. The way to go. Alexander Davis, if you're listening, I told you you can get it on kpft.org on your computer. That's one of my students I was talking to today. I'm your host, Dr. Mary Edgerton, with Nicole Rochelin on the boards. Nicole, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mary. How are you?
Well, okay, I have to ask. Do I pass? Have I learned how to pronounce Rochelin?
Yes, you have learned how to pronounce Rochelin, yes.
You don't know how hard it is to stop myself from saying Nicole Rochelin.
That's the Texas way. I'm Chicago native. You have to say the Chicago native way.
Oh, well, you know, I have cousins from Tivola.
Tivola?
Which is known in Italy as Tivoli.
Oh.
But you are so lucky to be here every Wednesday. You get to hear everybody. You want to give us a shout out about the show?
What can I say about this show besides it is amazing? I have learned so much from it. I apply it to almost everything because I did not understand the power of storytelling until I became affiliated with the show and also a student of Dr. Hank as well. So I appreciate the show. I love the show. And that is why I am still here.
It's so great to have you here.
Thank you.
I'm glad. You really give us continuity, and I can tell you love the show.
I do. I do indeed.
Yes, you're a real pro back there.
I thought it was the salary. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Salary with a small S.
A very small S. But hey, someone has to start somewhere, you know?
So tell us a little bit more about our sponsors.
Well, oh, yes, I would love to do so, Mary. Well, to start, everyone needs to follow us on our Facebook, and we would love it if you would like us before you leave. Don't just like us. Tell your friends, your families, your loved ones. Let them know all about us, too. We want to know, and we want to keep you in the know as well. But we have program clips on our YouTube channel, So What's Your Story 90.1, and all of our past So What's Your Story programs on the Houston Storyteller Guild website at www.houstonstorytellers.org. And if you just go to the radio program tab and enjoy, you could find bunch of stuff there, and I promise you, you will love it. The Guild also, of course, is our very proud sponsor, and they have their swaps that meet on the fourth Tuesday of every month at Temple Emmanuel, that's located at 1500 Sunset. Also, don't miss our friends at The Moth at Warehouse Live, and that's the second Tuesday of the month. And don't forget, folks, make sure you keep calling and pledging so that we can keep bringing you us as well as the wonderful stories.
Yes. Thank you all out there. Just pick up that phone, make that call, pick up your computer, get on the internet. And thank you, Nicole. Now, before we hear some more from my guest tonight, just want to remind our listeners, we'll be back this time next week. Well, we'll be back assuming that the lights are on and the electricity's running, for which we need those pledges. But yes, we'll be back next week with Greg Odell as host. So, Warren, you were just telling us a little bit about Yonda Hartog having come to Houston and having volunteered at the old J.D. Hospital mm-hmm. and the really wretched conditions mm-hmm. there.
Yeah. And my wife trained there before it was torn down, and so I got to visit her occasionally when she was on call and see it for myself.
What was it like?
It was a very old hospital, a very crowded hospital, very, I guess you'd say, dirty and smelly hospital.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I always thought that
with some amazing people who worked there. My wife, we were newlyweds. My wife went to the bathroom. She probably was allowed to go to the bathroom once every 24 hours. She left her wedding ring in the stall, and the lady who cleaned the bathroom found her. I mean, how amazing is that?
Yes, that's a lovely story.
In a crowded urban hospital.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is that's special. And I think the people there who worked there were special. So Yonda Hartog, how did he get to work at the hospital? I think it was a little closed, wasn't it? It was a little difficult to get in?
Yes. There was a head of volunteers who did not allow contact with the patients. So volunteers could do stuff with things like work in the gift shop, if there was one, I don't know, stuff like that. But they were not allowed to have patient contact. But they finagled their way. Jan's wife, Marjorie, primarily, and her friend made this happen. And then they brought Jan in. And then Jan was a very charismatic individual. And within a year, they had 500 volunteers. They were members of the Live Oak Friends Meeting Quaker here. Most of the Quakers volunteered, and then they started bringing their friends. Before you knew it, you had members of the River Oaks Garden Club volunteering there, Republicans, Democrats, the county judge was a volunteer there. And by doing this, they all saw the deplorable conditions. They wanted to do something about it. Eventually, they formed the Harris County Hospital District, which solved the problem, but made things infinitely better because they created a separate funding entity to pay for this.
So if we go back to you being at Baylor, and while you were in community medicine, I guess you had read this book. So how did you meet Jan de Hartog? Was he still living in Houston?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Shall I tell you my story of how I met him?
Please.
Okay. Jan was kind of dramatic. He was actually a very, very famous playwright as well as novelist. And he would write things in five acts, six acts. So this story has five acts. The first act is the phone call with Jan de Hartog. So my wife, Marcia, and I were both trainees, students, fellows in the Texas Medical Center. And we stumbled across this book, The Hospital, the one that you stumbled across years later. And it truly changed our lives. The book helped us see very clearly the sort of bipolar nature of health care in the U.S. between those who were insured and were getting the best care in the world and those who were uninsured and were getting care that was equivalent of or less than what some third world countries would offer. And so with that, we dedicated our lives to going into community health. We wanted to work with the uninsured. And so not too long after that, I was given a faculty position at Baylor College of Medicine. And it dawned on me this year that I started there was 1989. It was exactly a quarter century, 25 years since the publication of this book that had changed my life. And it had changed Houston. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to find this author and bring him to Houston and have a 25th year celebration? Because he truly was a hero. His book had really made it, helped create the momentum to establish the Harris County Hospital District, which is now called Harris Health. But how to find him? I went to Harper & Row. They gave me his editor. His editor gave me an address in Belgium. I wrote to him, and one day my phone rang. And this was my hero on the other end of the line. He said, well, I'm sort of surprised that Houston wants me back. He said that we left under pretty negative circumstances. I guess you know about that if you've read the book. And I said, sir, whatever negative reactions happened way in the past, and everybody in Houston has forgotten about that by now. I was so naive. And I said, the work you did made it possible for the formation of this hospital district. Hundreds of thousands of patients now get care thanks to the formation of this hospital district. 10 years after you left, they formed about 10 or 15 community clinics throughout the city, access to primary care. You had a big part in all that, and we want to honor you. And he said, well, if that's the case, I'd be delighted to come and tell my story. And so I hung up the phone, and I was just elated. I thought, this is going to be so nice to honor this man. Little did I know that there was more drama to come. Shall I tell you about the second phone call?
Please.
Okay. So that was the that was the first phone call. There's two more. The second one came from the Dutch Consular General. So what happened was I scheduled Mr. de Hartog to speak at the medical school. We announced it at the med school. We announced it throughout the medical center. And then we got one of the Houston papers, I can't remember if it was the Post or Chronicle, to write an article about Jan de Hartog returns to Houston. And they started bringing back all these old articles from the 1960s. And the first day that article came out, my phone rang again. And the person on the other end of the line was the Dutch Consular General, just a delightful man. And he was so excited that Jan de Hartog was coming to Houston. I said, oh, you know Jan de Hartog? And he said, are you serious? He said, I know that he did something in Houston in the hospitals, but he's done a lot more than that. I said, well, tell me about it. He said, and I'd heard vaguely about this, but I had no idea the importance of it. It said, as a very young man, he became a ship captain. And in Holland, a ship captain is a really big deal. We're the king of the seas. We have these ocean-going tugboats that ship cargo all around the world. And he was one of those captains as a very young man. But what he really wanted to be was a novelist. And his first book, written in the early 30s, was Holland's Glory. I said, yes. He said, this book just happened to be published at the time that Hitler invaded Holland. And it became immediately a symbol of the Dutch resistance because it praised the glory of Holland. The bad news was that Hitler banned the book and put a price on the author's head. The good news, if you might call it good, is that if you're a young writer and you're trying to be noticed, and if the most infamous person in the world notices you and bans your book, then every good person in Europe is going to want to read it. So, because of this powerful book and because of de Hartog's subsequent activities in the Dutch underground, the Consular General told me, Jan de Hartog became a national hero. And he said, I mean hero with a capital H. He said, among my generation, he is a hero to this day. So he said, well, I'm so excited you have brought him, you're bringing him to our city. And what I would like to do is offer a reception for him when he comes to Houston. Would that be all right? I said, of course. And so we made a plan. He would come to New York. He had to do some business there at Harper & Row. And then he would come to Houston on Thursday morning. The Dutch consulate would host him at a reception around 12 or 1 p.m. And then on Friday, he'd speak at the medical center. And that was the plan. Until I got a third phone call. You want to hear about that one? Or you want to take a little break?
Let me just announce one more time, but I'm sitting here. I've heard the story, but I want to hear it again. Every time I hear it, it's fresh and new, and Jan de Hartog is this incredible hero who becomes more hero and more hero. And, you know, I just saw Wonder Woman, and this is a hero come to life. You know, this is someone who steps out of the pages of your imagination. But let me say real quick, it's pledge night. Please call. Get out your pen. 713-526-5738. Pledge support for KPFT. You can go online, and if you do, please select So What's Your Story as your favorite program. Hank, any updates?
Oh, Mary, I'm so hoarse. I'm so excited I can't even speak. No. Well, I'm optimistic. You know, we're kicking it off tonight, but we have to pace ourselves. This is going on for a while. I'm still waiting for a call. So is Nicole, since she's the one who'll be answering it. But, you know, no one listens. None of our listeners tune in and say, well, you know, none of them are being paid, so what do you expect if they're not doing very well? Because our listeners expect excellence. They always get it. And we need their help to keep something like this alive. We really do. You know, most of our guests are not professional tellers, but instead regular folks just like our listeners with astonishing stories to tell. So we just need your help to keep this human connection ignited by storytelling very much alive. Go to kpft.org and then to donations. And then tell us how you want to pay. Just don't use Nicole's credit card. And then scroll to So What's Your Story as the show that you designate. 713-526-5738, JAM-KPFT. We look forward to hearing from you.
So, Hank, it may be that our listeners are so riveted by the story that they can't get to the phone, and they're going to have to go to the internet on their computers and go to kpft.org after the show.
And speaking
and
of the internet, we can see here that we do have several listeners online right now who's listening to our show. So we know you're listening. So come on, 713-JAM-KPFT.
You can't hide from us.
Okay, or open up that second window and just start donating. I know we're all into multitasking right now. And speaking of multitasking, my brain is going in multiple directions, and I'm ready to hear about that third phone call. So right now we have the hero honored by the Dutch Consul General who's called you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm talking with royalty now.
Yes.
Practically. So I had two amazing phone calls. One from
my hero himself. And one from the Dutch consulate who said, well, he's a much more of a hero than you ever realized. And a little later in the story, you'll see how much he was. But the third call was as bad as the others were good. Everything, you know, seemed to be shaping up perfectly for this big event. And just 3 or 4 days before it was set to happen, my phone rang again. This time, the person on the other end of the line was not happy. And he just happened to be the executive vice president of Baylor College of Medicine, which is where I worked.
And how long had you been working there?
I had been a fellow there for about a year, but now I had just joined the faculty probably with 3 or 4 months. I did not even know who the man was. He had to explain who he was, which was kind of embarrassing too. So he began the conversation in a very supercilious way. I don't think I've ever heard this before or since. He said, Dr. Holloman. The way he said doctor. I'll never forget that sarcasm. He said, this is Gail McNutt, and I'll get right to the point. Now, from now on, I'm going to just call him General Patton, because that's who he was in my mind. I'm calling you to let you know that Dr. DeBakey is very upset with you. I did know who Dr. DeBakey was. This Jan de Hartog has been spreading lies about Dr. DeBakey in the surgery department and the medical school. And now you've invited him as a speaker. What the hell do you think you're doing?
That's pretty sharp talk.
Yeah. And the funny thing, he said this Jan de Hartog is spreading lies or has been spreading lies as though he's still doing it. You know, this was a long time ago. So I told Mr. McNutt that I knew that he had ruffled a few feathers, but that was a quarter of a century ago. And surely everybody was over that by now, right? I was so naive, but there was just silence on the other end, so I tried again. I realize he may not have told the powers that be what they wanted to hear, but surely we can agree he told them the truth and what they needed to hear. More silence. I said, the time has surely proved Mr. de Hartog to have been good and honorable man and a true Houston hero. At that point, he talked. He said, I'm not calling to debate this with you. I'm calling to tell you that Dr. DeBakey is very upset. And I'm asking you to disinvite this speaker. Now, I had never heard the word disinvite before. Have you ever heard that word?
I have never heard disinvite.
I didn't know there was such a thing. And I have to tell you that, and he reminded me again about Dr. DeBakey. He was bullying me, threatening me. So I don't know what happened, but I was at my best, really. And I think I sort of invoked the superpowers of my parents. I said, you know, I grew up in the South, and I learned my manners from my mom and my dad, and they would be so disappointed with me if I disinvited anybody, especially this close to the invitation, to the event. I said, you know, if any disinviting has to be done, I guess you'll have to take that up with my boss, my department chair. Maybe he'll be the one to disinvite. So after I hung up the phone, I kind of went into shock. I said, I can't believe it. First of all, that he did this to me. And secondly, I couldn't believe I dug my heels in. I mean, you would have thought it had the opposite effect, that I would have been scared to death for my job. But I was just so young, I just didn't know how to be scared. And then I became just, I remember, super disillusioned. I thought I had come to work at the enlightened world of science and progress and medicine, cutting edge of medicine. And I was in the middle of a good old boy network. I had grown up in a tiny town in eastern North Carolina. I knew about good old boy networks. I knew about some really bad ones, bad old boy networks. And here it was all over again. And then the next feeling I remember was anger. I remembered how my mother had been capable of standing up to anybody if they forced her to do something she didn't believe in. And I think I really channeled her at that point. And that's what gave me sort of the confidence not to back down. So, fortunately for me, my boss backed me up, and he did it in a very diplomatic fashion. He said, you know, Mr. de Hartog has probably already boarded the plane from Brussels. He's going to spend a couple of days in New York. Then he'll fly here. Before he comes to the medical school, he'll have a reception at the Dutch consulate. So he told his boss, this guy, that he would attend that event at the Dutch consulate if
he really was a troublemaker, we'll cancel the medical school lecture. That's what he said. But as I'll tell you in a minute, I don't think he had any intention of canceling it for reasons I did not realize. So that was the third phone call. I can tell you about the reception at the Dutch consulate.
Let's go to the reception. Okay. This is the telling moment. Either he's going to turn out to be the troublemaker or something else.
Exactly. So what we're going to have, so the listener will know, we're going to have a reception at the Dutch consulate. And then at some point after that, I'll tell you about the lecture at Baylor. Lots of surprises. So I picked him up at Hobby Airport. I had looked at his picture. I knew what he looked like from 25 years ago, and I recognized him. Very handsome man. I could see why he was so charismatic. And so we drove to the Dutch consulate, where at least 150 people were waiting. The place was packed. Well, I think you know this movie. It's my favorite movie. I've seen it 35 times, Casablanca.
It's my New Year's Eve movie.
Yeah. Do you know the scene where Victor Laszlo, who's the leader of the Nazi resistance, walks into Rick's bar? And they're having music and conversation and drinking and eating. And when Victor Laszlo walks in, everything stops. The room is quiet. Everybody stops whatever they're doing, and they just stare at him. They sort of stop to take in the aura of this hero who has just stepped into the room. And by the way, as a little side note, you probably remember also that the German officers see this as well. And you can see from the look on their faces that what they are thinking, that any resistance leader with this much magnetism must be done away with.
That sounds like McNutt and
yes.
Mickey. Not that I'm trying to draw any parallels. Keep going.
So you got it. Suddenly I feel like I'm on the set of Casablanca. And that's the next 2 days I'll be on the set of Casablanca. So we walked into the Dutch consulate. And I was just nervous, little 31-year-old. And everybody was there, very well-dressed, European, stylishly dressed, all drinking at 11 o'clock in the morning, whatever time it was. And immediately, I thought I was on the set of Casablanca because every person in that room stopped. And they just turned and stared at him. And I said, gosh, I'm sort of like Ingrid Bergman here. You know, I'm right on his, you know, elbow and next to this hero. And so after a few amazing moments, then somebody got the courage to walk up to this hero, and just all it was thank you, thank you, thank you, crying, hugging, and kissing, and tears. And a line formed. Every person in that room got into that line, that just informal reception line that formed at the door where he had walked in. And I have to say, never in my life before or since have I ever experienced anything like that. And now I'm thinking, oh boy, now how's he going to respond to this? He was the most gracious, generous person to receive that he could have been. He was humble, and he also had this, he made a little speech, and I thought he was going to say, look how amazing I am, look what I did. It was just self-deprecating humor, funny stories, love. He was a very loving, caring man, just the opposite of this devil that he had been, you know, I'd been described by my bosses where I worked. So my boss was there and he witnessed the spectacle. So I knew immediately one of two things could happen. He could respond the way the German officers responded to Victor Laszlo and say, we need to get rid of this man because he's just too popular. Or he could respond the way everyone else in the room had responded, with admiration and appreciation. Well, do you know that saying from Blaise Pascal about, I'm going to quote it, I looked it up, Cleopatra's nose, had it been shorter, the whole face of the world would have changed. In other words, Cleopatra was this beautiful woman, and all the most powerful men from Rome came to court her, and they gave up kingdoms for her, right? They said if her nose had been longer or shorter, the world might have turned out differently. Well, I didn't know it, but there were a couple of tiny details that probably played a big part in this drama that meant that I had the deal sealed, even if DeHartog had not been so gracious. This boss, this Dr. Robert Raichel, my department chair, was also new at Baylor at the time, and I didn't know it, but he had two passions other than medicine. The first was his love affair of the sea. Well, Jan de Hartog, he had this huge boat. He once did a trip all the way up to Canada, up the Atlantic Ocean in his boat. I mean, he's serious. Well, he learned that Jan de Hartog was a famous captain also, so he had to meet this man. His second passion was collecting old and rare books. He had collected every one of Jan de Hartog's 20-plus published books and wanted his autograph and had read about his adventures at the sea. And so his dream was to bring this famous ship captain out on his boat, if not to the Atlantic Ocean, at least to Galveston Bay. And we did that. We did that. But that had kind of sealed the deal. DeBakey didn't have a chance because my boss wanted to go sailing with this guy.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. You know, while I was reading about Jan de Hartog, he was actually nominated for the Nobel Prize in Literature.
Oh, yeah.
So again, you feel as though, for me, not having met him, as though a shadow of greatness passed me by, and I felt the rustle of his cloak.
Yeah. And he wrote the four-poster. So he wrote lots of good books. He also was a very famous playwright. He won lots of, you know, Tony Awards and that kind of thing. The four-poster was one of the longest-running plays in the, I guess it was the 50s, on Broadway. And I Do, the musical, was based on the four-poster. He wrote several plays, but that was
I think
most
he was also put up for a Tony, nominated for a Tony.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't remember whether he was awarded one.
I believe he got a Tony.
I think he did get it.
For the four-poster.
I think
I'd
he
have
did.
To look that up.
I think he did. Okay, well, let's just everybody take a deep breath. This is a beautiful story. Let's hear from Hank. We know that there's people online. Has anything trickled in, or we're going to be optimistic about all these listeners are just hanging on because they can't make time for the phone?
Well, I can tell you this. You know, these are beautiful stories, Warren. They really are. You know, all I can say is play it again, Warren. It's just wonderful. In the meantime, you know, I wonder who's going to call us first, because we're still waiting for the first caller. But in the meantime, I am optimistic. But you know what I would really love? Whenever you guys have a chance, is that you were asking Nicole earlier what KPFT has done for her, what kind of an impact it's made in her life. And I would love to hear from the two of you as well, if you have a moment, what KPFT have done for you, because you are so significant to this show and to the station. And just if our listeners just understood, and I know they do, the poignancy of some of these stories and the relevancy and how rare they are. We just don't have many venues at all where we can hear things like this. And just wanted to get a sense of what this station means to you, because it really is the icon of community radio.
Well, Warren, should I go first?
Okay.
Thanks. I know you're the guest. You really should go first, but I just had this answer bubbling up inside of me. I grew up in a small town of 5,000 people, and there were many stories of life there, which I did come to appreciate after I moved away from there. But the point was, I always wanted to be in the hub of listening to people's experiences. I love to travel because I love to see different cultures. I love to read because I love to learn other things. And I love to hear people tell their story. That's the bubbling of the universe around me. And I don't want to be separate from it. I want to be right in the middle of it. So being a co-host on this show has put me right in the middle of the currents, the torrents, the turbulence, the everything, the calmness, the everything that storytelling is. Okay, Warren.
And I'll just play off of that, because my hometown was about 1,800 people.
Ooh, you got me beat.
And I grew up in the country, basically, listening to the stories of my father, my uncles, and as a kid, of course, pretending not to listen.
Right.
And then I, like you, I took a career in academic medicine. And you think about the way you tell stories there. It's this very, to me, unnatural thing called scientific writing.
Oh, it's awful.
You publish these papers.
And I've never felt that that was me. And when I came back to storytelling as an older man, I felt I had rediscovered my voice. And this is sort of what I was raised to do, the way I was raised to communicate. And when Hank invited me to come on the show and tell a story, I thought, this, I've found my voice. So, Hank, thank you.
Well, thank you, because your voices are so incredibly essential to what we do here. And you're right. Both your comments are so beautiful, and I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm glad I did, because people need to hear the kind of impact that storytelling is making on those who try to bring it to them. And, it's been said, and it's true theoretically, that everybody is a natural storyteller. They really are. Everybody has a voice, and those voices are so unique, and these are the voices that really we're paying for. And that number, in case you want to pay for it, is 713-526-5738. We sure would appreciate it if you could call in and let us know how much you appreciate that you appreciate what we do.
Thank you, Hank. And thanks for giving us the chance to talk about storytelling from our point of view. And speaking of storytelling, so how did the lecture go?
Mm-hmm. Well, there was more drama. The morning of the lecture, somebody came to me and said, "Don't tell how I know this, but I thought you deserved to know that this General Patton I told you about and his sidekick, Dr. DeBakey, had organized a boycott of the lecture." Now, you remember I said when D'Hartog published his first book as a very young author, it just so happened that Hitler banned the book.
Oh, yes.
And that, besides nearly getting him killed, it did actually, by the weird fate way things work out, it launched his career as a writer. And, I learned a valuable lesson in life. If you want to fill up an auditorium, get somebody that people don't really like to try to organize a boycott. So when we walked into the lecture hall, which held 300 people, as I recall, or 290 or something like that, every seat was full. People were sitting in the middle aisle. They were standing on the side aisles. They were standing in the back. You could not see the wall in the back of the room. And people were even sitting on the floor in the front. So there were 350 to 400 people in that room. Now, despite all this, and after the lecture, in which this man, I told you he was my hero, but he was also the best storyteller I've ever listened to. And I can tell you about that too sometime. But when he finished, there was a 5-minute standing ovation. Now, I've never experienced that before either. But people had come from all over Houston, even the county judge who had volunteered at the hospital was there. The most powerful man in Harris County. Despite all this, I had a sinking feeling that they had one more trick up their sleeve. Something bad was going to happen. I was just enough of a pessimist to think there was going to be some kind of ugly confrontation. So when this amazing lecture was over, a long line formed to greet the speaker. And I said, "Wow, this is great. These people aren't going to leave." And the line went on. It lasted a long time. And I started thinking, well, maybe it's going to be okay. And then I looked at the very back of the line, and I could not believe what I saw. One of the most feared surgeons at the medical school, a man who had trained with this powerful Dr. DeBakey, a very tough man who ran the surgery department at Bentob Hospital. His name was Ken Maddox, but everybody called him Mad Dog Maddox. Now, my wife had trained with him, and she said, "Warren, that's a little misleading. What made him mad was if you did a surgical procedure wrong. He was trying to train you to do it right. And the other thing that made him mad is if you treat an uninsured patient at a public hospital, if you did not treat that patient with as much respect as you treated an insured patient, say at Methodist or St. Luke's Hospital." But I have to say, he sure intimidated me. He was a very intimidating looking man. I didn't know him at the time. So as Mad Dog Maddox moved toward the front of the line, I prepared for this confrontation.
I just, in my mind, I created this narrative where Dr. DeBakey had ordered him to come and say something, you know, confrontive or mean to our speaker. And give full disclosure, it was about that time I noticed that I had not used as much deodorant as I wish I had used. So, when that moment arrived, when this last man in line got to the front, I kind of stood as closely as I could to listen, but I didn't want to be too close. And this is what he said. Mr. DeHartog, remember how General Patton had said Dr. Holloman?
Yes.
Well, he said Mr. in the most humble, subservient way you could. He said, Mr. DeHartog, like, please, sir, may I talk with you? When you were here 25 years ago, I admired your work, but I was still in training, and I was not able to speak my mind. It would not have been safe. But now, I can. So I want to thank you for all you did to help improve funding for our public hospitals and to make people aware of the problems there. And I also want to thank you for inspiring me to my own life's work. Most of my classmates entered the private sector, but I decided to stay right here at Ben Taub General Hospital, where I'm now the head of the surgery department and where we are doing all we can to make things better. Oh, and would you do me the honor? And he held out his 25-year-old copy of the book to be autographed. And I have to say, at that moment, I could have kissed Mad Dog Maddox, but he probably would have killed me.
You make my eyes tear up just to think of it, just to think that here this person came. And like I said before, we all want to leave our mark on the world. And here comes Jan de Hartog. He's left his mark on Holland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he comes to Houston, and he leaves his mark on Houston, but in such a positive way for the uninsured. And as we face problems today with access to health care and with the whirling politics around the American insurance business, to see that this one person came and made such a dramatic change in the fourth largest city in the United States.
Yeah, and it had a multiplier effect. For the first few years after that, we got some funding. Actually, Harper and Row, at cost, sold us. We got some funding, and at cost, they sold us reprints of the book. And we gave copies to every medical student at Baylor and University of Texas.
So hugely important. When I bought it, I thought I should have been reading this in medical school.
Yeah.
And I, as I tell people about it, and they say, as I think I mentioned before, where can I get it? I said, I'm not going to lend you mine.
And after doing that for 3 or 4 years, the editor at Harper & Row said, I'm sorry, but we have a new owner. And I think he's actually somebody pretty famous. And he said, unfortunately, his eye is not on the sparrow. Oh. And so we were no longer able to purchase the book at cost. And but we're looking for a donor. If anybody would like to donate to this, we would get more books for more medical students.
That would be great. You know, I know that there's the self-publishing, in which they actually print the books on demand.
Yeah.
That would be something to look at.
Yeah.
So, Hank, I'm going to give you one last chance here to tell us if anybody came through. And then right after that, I would love to hear a short little 2 or 3 minute story, maybe something from Jan de Hartog during the war.
Mm-hmm.
So, Hank, how's that going?
You know, I love that word donation. That's all I can say. You know, Warren articulated that, and I wish we had some tonight. We don't so far, but I am convinced that there's going to be a bombardment of calls coming in any second now after this magnificent show. And every show is magnificent, and I think our listeners know that. But, you know, maybe they're pacing themselves, because after all, they can get online after this show or any time this week at kpft.org. Go to donations and then tell us how you're going to pay. And then scroll to So What's Your Story as the show that you designate for that money. And call us at 713-526-5738. We'd love it if you can call us during the show. If that is not convenient for you, just make it real clear to one of our steadfast volunteers that that your donation is earmarked for So What's Your Story.
Hank, you know all of us story listeners wouldn't walk away from the last 2 or 3 minute story of this special man to make a phone call when we can do it online. So, Warren.
The book is just full of
amazing stories. One of my favorites that actually pulls the war and the hospital together. Remember I said that the volunteers were diverse from every branch of politics and religion and everything else. Well, so, and volunteer, a nurse volunteer typically would serve in the middle of the night. And so two nursing volunteers were serving in the pediatric ward together. And this is an open ward with probably dozens of children. And two men were serving together. So you've got two men working as nurses of little children. And they're both white men. And the baby in need was an African-American baby who needed their diaper changed. A very sick African-American baby needing their diaper changed. And so these two men were trying to figure out to each other how to do this, and they were helping each other. And that's not the most amazing thing. The most amazing thing is, of all the 500 volunteers, these were like the least unlikely to be paired together. One of the volunteers was Rabbi Moshe Kahana, a very famous rabbi in Houston, and the other, of all things, during World War II, had been a German U-boat captain. And Jan said he was having a really bad night that night. He was thinking, the world is unfair, it's horrible, nothing good ever happens. And he walks into the room, and he sees those two men working together to help that baby. And he said immediately the passage from the prophet Isaiah came to his mind. The lion and the lamb shall lay down together, and a little child shall lead them. And that was sort of his guide for the rest of his life.
Oh, wow. So if any of you watch this on YouTube, you'll see me rubbing my arm because of the chill bumps on them. That's a beautiful story.
Thank you. There's plenty more. It's an amazing book. And you can get it if you from used bookstores. You just go on Amazon, used books, that kind of thing.
Right. I did get mine from Amazon, and there are actually several sources. In fact, there's a great used bookstore in the Heights. Hey, real quick, Warren, want to say goodnight?
A happy Father's Day to all you fathers out there.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay, so everybody, Brian and Jason are on next to tell the world another class act on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. Our stories are happy, sad, fantastic. They are stories, and that is what stories are all about. So keep loving a great story. We'll keep bringing them to you. Thank you so much, Warren. Thank you to our radio audience, and I will forever be reminding you that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
KPFT and the Latino programs invite you to spend an afternoon full of music and poetry this coming Sunday, June 25th at Fitzgerald's. Join us at the Festival de Música y Poesía, the Festival of Music and Poetry, a fundraiser benefiting our radio station KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. There will be local independent bands such as Tamo Junto, No Te Mueras en Mi Casa, Dem, and Let Me Remember, and inspiration from death row poets Salvador Pliego and Miriam Maldonado. Come have fun and help us stay on the air by supporting these programs and your station. Sunday, June 25th, starting at 2 p.m. at Fitzgerald's. Find us on Facebook by searching for Festival de Música y Poesía KPFT. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
KPFT has a fun drive coming up, and we need your help to make it a success. Our phone volunteer trainings are coming up, and we could really use your help. You'll meet KPFT listeners just like you and help this community radio station. Your efforts make a difference and can make this a fun, fast, and successful drive. We hold phone volunteer training regularly to accommodate all kinds of schedules. Visit kpft.org for a complete list of training dates. If you are a seasoned phone volunteer, call 713-526-4000 to sign up for a volunteer shift. You're tuned into Pacifica Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, facebook.com/KPFD Houston.